is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Next on News for the Soul Radio, it's time for Perfectly Holistic with Pam. Pam is a cat mom and holistic health seeker who, after suffering an injury that wouldn't heal, was led on a journey to seek out alternative, holistic, and natural medicine. She now shares what she learned, helping people and their cats along their path to holistic health. Pam has taken courses in holistic health for animals, muscle testing, and animal communication. Please welcome Pam back to News for the Soul.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for being here tonight. This is a Perfectly Holistic radio show. I am Pam Roussel, and it is an honor and a privilege to be in the presence of the very amazing Dr. Judy Morgan. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. For those of you who do not know who she is probably one of the most highly sought out integrative holistic vets on the internet these days that has a passion for helping pet parents and be empowered to learn ways that they can help their pets at home, you know, because you never know when something's going to happen and you can't always find a vet. You can't always get into a vet. So I so appreciate you sharing your wisdom and knowledge tonight. We are going to talk about feline longevity. So thank you, Dr. Morgan.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here. I'm happy to be here.
Well, and I have to say, I really hope you do one of your rants tonight because I love them. If you don't follow her on Facebook or Instagram, you guys got to go follow her because she does the best rant. And I'm sitting there going in the background, yeah, you go, girl. You tell them like it is because I feel the same way.
Well, something has to kind of kick me into gear for the rants to occur. So I don't know if I have that much energy. It's late in the evening. But, yeah, the rants are just something will hit my hot button and off I go.
Well, you know, sometimes those messages are necessary to get out, so I appreciate them. You don't know what you don't know, you know, a lot of times pet parents just don't know, you know, so it's kind of
exactly.
Fun. Yeah. So what kind of wisdom and knowledge can we learn tonight about feline longevity? I know there's a long list that we can do to help our cats live longer, healthier lives. And a lot of it, I have a feeling, is going to revolve around what not to do. But I am so yeah, there's a lot of things we can do, but then there's things we probably should avoid as well. So that kind of impedes that. So go ahead and jump in wherever you are. And you guys, if you have questions, drop them in the comments here. We are watching those and we'll be happy to answer them as we go.
So, well, first of all, I'm just going to give you a little pre-warning that I am in my studio, but right on the other side of the door are two mama cats and seven kittens that are now like 8 and 10 weeks old. And so you never know who might come crashing through the door. If they get really, really, really loud and obnoxious, I may have to let them come join me. But then they chew on things. And I was doing a show a week or so ago with the two crazy cat ladies, and one of the cats decided to jump up on the shelf behind me and everything went flying. So I right now feel like I am the crazy cat mom.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really want to have 12 cats, but because we have other cats too, I am now the crazy cat mom with 12 cats, and I was hoping some would get adopted one. So I can go on a rant about why we should not have 12 cats. We have literally a brand new house. We haven't even lived in it a year. And we're trying to keep them. First, they started out when they were little tiny things. They started out in my studio here. So I didn't have my studio for about 6 weeks. And then they got big enough that they were destroying everything. So we moved out into the next room, which is our office. But now they're big enough that they climb the shelves and they knock all the books down and they keep resetting things on my computer, and my husband won't even work. He literally bought another computer and a laptop desk and is working in our bedroom because he's like, they can't work. They climb you. They climb
oh, yes.
you tree. So I have scars all up and down my back from cats climbing me. So that's first thing. Don't have 12 cats at the same time, especially little kittens, because they're destructive. they have destroyed. They want out of the room. So they, from clawing the bottom of the door,
mm-hmm.
they've destroyed the door. And my husband hasn't flipped out, and I don't know. He's an architect. I'm like, why aren't you flipping out? And he said, there's not much I can do about it. So I cry every time I look at our brand new door that is literally destroyed. But anyway, but the kittens have been fun because these are naturally reared.
Yes.
Kittens. And it's actually it's the second time because the three older cats that we have are now maybe 13.
Mm-hmm.
And they were bottle babies. Their mama was a shelter kitty that came in for spay. And when we would spay the shelter animals, we had to terminate all pregnancies. So we would get these mamas in that were full term. And being the kind of people that we are, we didn't want to terminate kittens. So we had to go ahead and spay the moms. And then we weren't allowed to send kittens back to the shelter because they would get sick immediately and die. So the shelter wouldn't take the kittens. And we were supposed to euthanize them. Well, we didn't want to do that. So we raised a lot of bottle babies. So the three old cats that we have are bottle babies from that. And the neat thing about that was that they were raised with our spaniels. So they think they're dogs. And they act more like dogs, sort of. But they started eating out of once they started eating solids, they started eating out of the bowl with the dogs, which are raw fed. So this is the second round of cats. It's been 13 years in between to want to have more cats than what I already had. It's the second round of kittens that I've been able to raise as raw-fed babies, I got to tell you, it's much easier when you have the mamas and you don't have to do the bottle feeding.
Absolutely.
I recommend keeping the mamas.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh.
But, so now I've got cats meowing up.
I hear them.
It's going to be, they're waiting for their evening meal, their fourth meal of the day. So.
Of course. Laura Lee says, let the kittens in.
yeah, you let the kittens
be
in.
Be careful what you ask for.
I will just tell you that right now. It will get ugly. They're adorable, but, I just found the comment. So, I was in the private chat. But it's really kind of fun, and that's why I thought maybe some people would want to adopt them, because it's rare that you get to start them off really on the right foot. So interestingly, both mamas were feral cats. One was a barn kitty who showed up after we moved in and built our barn. And then the other one, we ended up buying the neighbor's house and my daughter moved in there and the cat came with that house and her name is Porch Kitty because she was living under the porch. So, I took Porch Kitty in to get spayed, and they said, well, she's got mammary glands full of milk. And I mean, these weren't cats that we could really touch. We trapped them.
Right.
And I said, oh, who? So the x-rayed her and said, well, there's no kittens in the mama, and she's got milk, so you've got kittens somewhere. So, of course, then we had to go find kittens crawling under the house. So we ended up with all these cats. But you would think, being feral cats, they would come with all kinds of parasites. None. Negative fecals.
Wow.
Now, we had been feeding these cats, and of course, they were hunting in the wild, so they've been on a raw diet, and the mamas weren't vaccinated other than by what they were exposed to in nature. They were wild kitties. So, interestingly, no external parasites, no internal parasites with these cats.
That's incredible.
Because they're naturally rare.
Mm-hmm.
So, even with the babies, no internal parasites. And they haven't been vaccinated yet. So the two mamas, they have now been able to be spayed, and I let them get a rabies vaccine because they're going to live outside.
Yeah.
So do a rabies vaccine. So the kittens at 8 and 10 weeks old have had nothing yet. And, and both mamas were leukemia and FIV negative as well.
That's awesome.
Really cool. So we're not vaccinating them for it. I don't like the vaccine. So, cat longevity, how do we keep our cats alive longer? Well, first of all, you feed them the right thing. So there is dry kibble is absolutely the worst thing we could ever feed our kitties.
Yep.
So, it's a convenience for us. It's horrible for our cats. So these cats will never get dry kibble. So that's the first thing that we're going to do to get longevity.
Mm-hmm.
They're allowed outside. We have, I'd like to say it's a really safe environment, but we did have one that went the quarter mile up the driveway and played in traffic. So not in this group, another one, another wild one that came and then left. So it is really good for cats to get safe outdoor playtime if that is a possibility. So for these kittens, because they're tiny, so far safe outdoor playtime has been on our back patio with us, you know, kind of
hurting them,
like really watching them. And I am going to have to move them out to our, I can't have this many cats in my house. They're destroying the place. So they're going to move to the barn when they're big enough that I feel like it's safe for them.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been discussing that. We're like, well, we could put them in the tack room for a while. And, you know, so then they'll kind of get used to the barn environment. We'll feed them in there and get them used to the idea, like, this is home base. We do have another kitty who lives in the barn. She is from a previous litter from one of these mamas. And she sticks around the barn really well. They, like, the cats that are in the barn, they kind of have this little tiny radius around the barn.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have cats who can go outside, whether it's supervised play or a catio, something like that, you'll find that their muscle tone is so much better. Like all of our house cats go outside.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have better muscle tone. They don't get obese.
Yep.
And we actually have one cat who managed to somehow tear a cruciate ligament. He managed to be out on New Year's Eve, which he was not supposed to be a couple years ago. So I think he got scared, fell off a fence, fell out of a tree, did something, tore a cruciate, and I had him signed up for surgery and ended up not having surgery done because it was during the process we were moving from New Jersey to North Carolina. So he had forced rest inside the house while we were doing all the packing, and I didn't want the cats to go outside and then not be there the day the moving van was leaving.
Exactly. That would be my fear.
So he had forced rest in a room, and then when we moved, we were in temporary housing. We bought a temporary house while this was being built, and it wasn't an environment that I felt was as safe for them to go outside.
Mm-hmm.
So again, he had 8 months of forced housebound.
Yep.
And the leg actually healed to the point now where he jumps up on the fences and goes outside. And, so it was an interesting thing. First of all, cruciate tears in cats are really rare.
Yeah.
They're screaming at me. cruciate tears are rare.
Yep.
So I had never seen one. In 37 years of practice, I never saw a cat with a cruciate tear.
Wow.
Yeah, I got one. But it was actually a good little experiment to see that he didn't need a ton of drugs, and didn't need surgery, and the leg stabilized enough that he is perfectly comfortable with it. So I think a lot of times we jump the gun, and it's hard. I mean, surgery would have been a quick fix, but he still would have had 6 or 8 weeks of
rest
and healing and then rehab. And interest, there haven't been very many studies in cats because we just don't see this in cats very often. But the studies in dogs show that those with surgery and those without surgery still get arthritis. Doesn't matter.
Interesting.
So if you can kind of ride it out and let them naturally heal themselves. So we use naturally anti-inflammatories, that sort of thing. But I didn't put them on non-steroidals. I didn't put them on a bunch of drugs. And he's fine. He's done really well.
Imagine that.
Imagine that. Let the body heal itself. Imagine how that happens.
Yeah, I guess as long as there's a blood supply, it can heal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if I had still, I retired from practice right before he did this, of course. if I still had the opportunity to have my cold laser, that would have been a great way to get healing for him. Certainly acupuncture can be done, chiropractic, and so I can still do those things on him, but I don't have my old laser anymore, bummer. So we can do a lot of things naturally to get these guys to heal, decrease the inflammation. So we have a ton of, as a matter of fact, my daughter Gwen, who is our COO of the company, one of her cats is arthritic. And so she has him on the PEA, which is a natural anti-inflammatory. She gives him golden paste. She gives him CoQ10. And he does really, really, really well.
That's
so
awesome.
You know, one of the things that we just need to be careful of is not jumping in right away with a whole bunch of drugs. As a matter of fact, when the two mommy cats were spayed, I declined the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories that they wanted to send home. I said, hey, you can keep them. Give them to somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you use instead? Like a homeopathy or a herbal or something?
No. Well, yes. I mean, we have Arnica, which is pretty good. But then we have the We have natural anti-inflammatories, the PEA.
Yep.
CBD is really good for them as well. So there's just so many things that you can do and not have to use harsh drugs. And I guess it depends on the surgery. Like if I had allowed my cat to have the cruciate ligament surgery, like orthopedic surgeries are really painful, really painful. So I probably would have allowed some drugs to that. And I'm sure the mama kitties were given injectable painkillers while they were at the hospital. I can't control that.
Yeah, exactly.
So it is what it is. But I'm not paying any attention at all to what's going on.
Oh no, it's just a lot of good comments. Oh, and by the way, if anyone wants to adopt any of our kittens, be sure to let her know.
They will get a rabies vaccine just because
they're exposed to outdoors.
They would die. I don't think we have a big issue, but we do have a family of fox that live on our farm, and it's when I first saw the so last year we had the mama fox and she had kits, and this year mama fox four kits again this year. Fox are really interesting. If you've never dealt with fox, I had to look them up and learn a lot about them because they're living here on our farm. And the only thing that I know is that, yes, they can get distemper, and they very commonly get mange, canine distemper.
Yep.
So I was worried, you know, because we've got the barn cat, and then we have all of our farm animals and stuff. And when I looked them up, they actually don't attack your cats, and they don't go after your dogs. They kind of, they're really more into like moles and voles and mice.
And
plenty of those for them to have.
Yeah.
But the other thing that's really interesting about fox is the way that they communicate. They sound like somebody being beaten to death. They scream.
Oh, like gosh.
So we, it's so funny. One night, my husband and I were in the house on the back patio, and we're like, what is that noise? Like somebody is getting killed. I thought like the neighbors were beating their dog or beating each other or or there was an animal trapped somewhere.
Oh
like,
my gosh.
Screaming for help. So we, you know, we go running
flashlight
back to the barn. We're looking around. It's the foxes. The way that they communicate, it's this blood curdling scream, and that's their normal communication. So they moved from, and apparently they move their dens quite often because of predators. So, and we have, apparently we have coyotes around too, living in the country thing.
Yes.
And so the coyotes will actually prey on the fox. So the fox actually move their dens fairly often. So they moved from our house up to my daughter's house. So my daughter's texting me at 2 o'clock in the morning. She's like, your foxes are screaming outside my house. My dogs are going crazy. And I'm like, first of all, they're not my foxes. And I can't control where they go at 2 o'clock in the morning. Sorry.
You're wild, sorry. Wild animals.
Our dogs are pretty deaf, so they don't even notice them. Anyway, that has nothing to do with our cats, but I feel pretty safe sending our cats out, but I am keeping these kittens in the house because I want them to be big enough that, you know, the hawks aren't going to be a problem and, you know, the predators aren't. So I have a lot of cats in the house.
No, it's fun. It's It's fun. Hey, we have a question from, I think it was Liza. She said she was wondering if turkey, I think she meant bone broth. Bone broth is good for senior cats. Yes. Is bone broth good for senior cats?
Yeah.
I would say so.
Bone broth is good for any cats. So it's going to be really good for seniors because it is
collagen.
Healing for arthritis.
Yeah.
It's also, so when we look at Chinese medicine perspective of food therapy, the kidneys are responsible for the bones. So any kind of liquid that we're feeding is going to be good. And bone broth actually supports the kidney element. So it's really good for them. The only thing that we have to be a little careful of is if we have a cat that's in late stage kidney failure, and I'm going to say late stage, like stage three, stage four, phosphorus could be a little bit high for them. So that would be the only time that I would potentially hold back a little bit on bone broth. But and bone broth is great. You can make it yourself. I made a fish bone broth for a really sick pet one time. Things up the house. It's like really.
It's horrible.
But yeah, you can make bone broth with anything. So even animals that have, you're worried about they have IBD or food allergies, just use a like rabbit carcass to make your bone broth. Something that is not going to be reactive for them.
Mm-hmm.
So something that's more of a novel protein. They really shouldn't react to a bone broth, even if they have like a chicken protein allergy, because it's not the protein that we're doing.
Exactly.
But we do have some animals that are really sensitive. Like they'll have a chicken protein allergy and you give them a little bit of bone broth from chicken or chicken organs and they still can be a little wonky with
off.
It. So, but you can make your bone broth out of any bones really.
Exactly. Okay, cool.
Oh, yeah, Open Farm just started making a bone broth. I just saw that.
I've used theirs.
Yeah, there's a lot of companies now that are making bone broth. The big thing with bone broth, I mean, the more processed it is, the kind of the less nutritious it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just because of the processing. But
yeah.
So if you can make your own, that's great. If not, then I really like the frozen ones that you can buy. And then my last choice would be the freeze-dried, you know, the powder bone broth that you rehydrate. And that's only because it's gone through, like, the freeze-thaw process for the freeze-drying. But it's still, once you rehydrate it, it still is a really good supplement for kitties.
Yep.
The big thing with kitties is moisture, 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 and some more moisture. So that's why that's one of the many reasons, I can give you a lot of reasons why we don't want to feed dry kibble, but one of them is the moisture content. Cats are really desert animals. They don't drink much at all. Like, I never see my cats drink because they are on raw food, so they're on a very high moisture diet. But if you feed your cats dry food, it's really hard for them to drink enough water to put back the 94% moisture that's missing out of the food. And so that's a little bit of a problem with freeze-dried raw as well, to really rehydrate it back to what it would have been if you fed it as you know, a raw prey or as a frozen raw. It's hard to get it rehydrated to the level that we want, but it does rehydrate a lot better than kibble, which will not rehydrate. I did the math once for a blog many years ago for figuring out how much water you would have to add back to kibble, because people tell me that all the time. Oh, I add water to his kibble. It's fine. It's rehydrated. I'm like, no, it's not. Something like a gallon of water to a cup of dry kibble. There's no way.
No, they can't. They can't even ingest as much water as they need to make up the difference. They just can't.
So, and I don't know if everybody, is everybody getting video as well as audio, or is this audio only?
No, it's video too.
Oh, so I'm just going to explain my black and white screen. So I'm going very retro these days, but it's actually my computer just, for some reason, about a week ago, I was trying to tape, I'm making a course on hospice care. And so I was trying to do voiceovers for my PowerPoints, and I've got the camera on, and all of a sudden it turned hazy yellow. And then after hazy yellow, it went to black and white. So this is what I got. So then I had an external camera that I put on, and as of tonight, my external camera also seems to have fried. So this is what we got.
Here we are.
Just letting you know, this is my new retro look. I like to say it's, we're in the Wizard of Oz. We're still in Kansas.
We're just rolling with it, guys.
So this is what you got.
Oh, that's so funny. That's so funny. Somebody asked, what are good treats for an older hyperthyroid cat or toppers for a freeze-dried diet?
So my superfoods, which kind of cross over dogs and cats, but the ones that I would really be focusing on for kitty cats.
Mm-hmm.
And again, when we have hyperthyroid cats, we got to be watching the kidney function, and when we're treating them with the thimazole, if you're doing that, the kidney function, you really got to monitor. But I love eggs. That we have chickens on our farm, mostly for the animals, and these cats love raw eggs. They will turn themselves inside out for a raw egg.
Wow.
So eggs, you can do raw or cooked. It's up to you. Eggs are really good. And then sardines in water, sardines in water, or fresh fish. And I don't like to feed big fish real often. So like pieces of salmon I'll do once a week, maybe twice a week. Cod, any kind of fish that you're baking, you can allow your kitties. There are some veterinarians who say never feed fish to cats. I've always fed fish to my cats. I've never had a problem. My cats love fresh fish. So, and then any meats that you're making that are not heavily seasoned and not the high fat stuff can certainly be given. Some cats absolutely love pumpkin, and it's not a bad thing to give them. It's a really good source of soluble and insoluble fiber. I don't use a lot of veggies for my cats, but every once in a while, you know, I've got one that he will come steal some sauteed broccoli. So it's kind of whatever your cat likes. Stuff like that is certainly not going to hurt them. And then, you know, certainly you can use, like, my cats absolutely love freeze-dried hearts. So chicken hearts, turkey hearts, beef heart, absolutely will. Pork tenderloin, freeze-dried pork tenderloin, they will turn themselves inside out for that.
Wow.
Sometimes they'll eat tripe. Yeah, it's amazing. My daughter taught her cats to do all kinds of tricks using chicken hearts because they think they're the best.
Yeah, that's true.
I tend not to go real heavy on the freeze-dried stuff. Actually, we have little tiny freeze-dried minnows now, too, that the cats go crazy for. But I tend not to do too heavy on the freeze-dried stuff, again, just because we want the moisture. So they get those as treats. But then certainly things like the eggs or the fresh meats, sardines, absolutely fine as toppers.
Yep, absolutely. Okay. Okay, yeah, you guys, if you are not seeing the comments in your Facebook feed, you have to kind of scroll a little bit. It stops showing until you kind of scroll, and then you can see them, and you can also enter comments too. Yeah, I don't know what changed with Facebook, but something did. Okay, so Liza says, can we just add broth to the freeze-dried?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So when you rehydrate your freeze-dried, you can use water, you can use bone broth, can use whatever liquid you want that your cat likes. But just make sure it's, like, I make it pretty soupy, which is interesting because we've started feeding our cats on the platters, the pet platters, instead of in a bowl. Cats don't like their whiskers to touch the side of the bowl, so the platters are awesome for the cats. And they've got little divots in them and a little, like, trail around the outside of the dish. I think she needs to make a fish-shaped one instead of a bone-shaped one for the cats.
Absolutely.
I'm going to tell her to make fish-shaped ones for the cats. But anyway, those little divots and that trail will hold quite a bit of moisture. So I make my freeze-dried pretty darn soupy, and it's still fine feeding it on the platter, but then they're also really busy chasing the liquid around and licking it out of there. So I've even just used my platters for bone broth by itself. And again, it just kind of, it, you know, takes some time to lick it out of the little divots, and they do really well with it. So somebody said the problem with dry is the ingredients. Well, there's a lot of problems with dry. So moisture is one of them. The second thing is that carbohydrates actually cause dental disease instead of preventing dental disease. That is such a darn myth. Kibble, they need kibble for their teeth. No, kibble wrecks their teeth. It changes their microbiome in their mouth and supports the wrong bacteria that actually form plaque and tartar. And so it would be like saying to your kids, here, eat cookies, because it's all sugar. Here, I want you to eat cookies two meals a day or just graze on it all day long.
Right.
And I'm never going to brush, you're never going to brush your teeth. You're never going to go to the dentist. And then you expect their teeth to be pearly white. Isn't going to work.
Not going to happen.
So that's a big myth. Another problem with, one of the problems with the moisture is that they don't drink enough. So when they don't drink enough, they make a super, super, super concentrated urine. So then we get urinary crystals, and then we get urinary obstructions, and then we're cutting penises off of cats because they're blocked and they can't pee. And instead of changing them to a high moisture diet, we start removing body parts.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of reasons why we don't like kibble. The sugar and the carbs, cats don't break down carbs very well. They don't. They have zero requirement for carbohydrates. They are obligate carnivores. However, the big pet food companies would have you believe that they are carnivores. They are not.
Yep.
So that contributes to obesity and chronic pancreatitis because kibble is sprayed with fats to make them want to eat it. That's their palatability factor. So they spray it with fats, and those fats, as soon as you open that bag of kibble, start to oxidize when they're exposed to light, air, and heat, and then it becomes rancid within 2 to 3 weeks. Now you're feeding your cat rancid food, and we wonder why they have pancreatitis.
Yeah, it's so true. They just don't understand.
Step one, get rid of the dry food.
Yep.
And the problem is, if you have a cat who's addicted to dry food, it can be, they've done a lot of studies in dogs, not as many in cats, but I know the same thing happens in cats. Whatever they start out on as a youngster, they develop a preference for that texture and that taste. And that's why it gets really easy to have an animal who's like, nope, I'm only going to eat my chicken kibble for the rest of my life. Because once they get started down that path, that becomes their preference. And it can be really hard. I remember when I first switched my cats, I fed kibble. That's what I learned in vet school. And when I finally learned that that was a bad thing to be doing, shame on me. You don't know what you don't know. So my oldest cat, it took me 6 months slowly taking a piece of kibble out of the bowl and putting something else in, taking another piece out and putting something else in. And so if you have a cat who is addicted, the first thing you want to do is get them to enjoy eating meat. And so the easiest way that I've found for those who say my cat absolutely will not change, first of all, they don't like a texture change. So they don't like going from a dry to a moist, and they don't like the taste change. So what I did when they started making the freeze-dried food, that made life so much easier. I would take the freeze-dried raw and crumble that and mix it in with their kibble and put it on top. So they start getting the taste for that, and it was still kind of a very similar texture. It wasn't quite as crunchy, but it was a similar texture. And then as I was putting more of that in and taking more kibble out, then I started sprinkling it with a little bit of water. And over time, more and water and more water and more water, I got it to where I wanted it to be. And once I got them to that point, then they would accept, you know, whatever raw I wanted them to eat. But my most stubborn cat, it took me 6 months to complete that process, because you can't starve a cat into it. They'll die.
Trying to starve them. They're martyrs. They're definitely martyrs.
They just go into liver failure and die.
I know, it's terrible. It's terrible, but I think you're right. They do imprint on what they start with, and they think that that's my food. So,
That's why I'm so happy that these cats got started on really high moisture diet, because they're just like, well, that's what we do. The other interesting thing is, because my other cats they didn't have a mama. they were bottle fed.
Yep.
So I started them on food at 3 weeks. Mm. I was like, yeah, you got to start eating something else because this getting up every couple hours all night is making me nuts.
Yep.
So, and we had a whole bunch of them at the time. So I started them on food at 3 weeks. These kittens, I started off, well, the food was out all the time because the mamas were eating it.
Exactly.
They had zero interest, zero, until about 7 weeks.
Wow.
They were just, no, we like mom.
Yeah.
Mom's good.
Mom's good.
So, yeah. And, you know, Gwen made a post for our Instagram and Facebook and, you know, showed the one poor mama, she's a better mama than the other one. Poor kitty's like, see, yeah, I'm done with this. She won't let them nurse. And her kittens were 2 weeks older. So the other mom, Domino, she had all 8 kittens lined up on her. One made this post like, you know, will you guys start eating real food? And people were like, no, let them keep nursing. I'm like, poor Domino.
There's more mama.
But she's a really good mom. I mean, she lets them nurse all the time. Still, she lets them nurse all the time. So,
that's so sweet.
But they're eating very well. They like their raw food.
That's great. That's great. So let's talk about some of the other like ways that we can help cats. I know there's like environmental stuff. There's, I know vaccines are a big topic for that as well.
Cats are interesting. You poke them with a needle and they like to make a tumor. Mm. It doesn't really matter what the needle is. So whether it's a vaccine, a steroid shot, mm-hmm. an antibiotic injection, whatever you poke into their little bodies, they go, ooh, are an invader. I should make scar tissue and a big lump around that. Oh, and then I should make cancer cells around that. It's just kind of what they want to do.
Mm.
So we want to put as few injections as possible into our kitty cats.
Yeah.
So vaccines are number one on the hit list. I forget what the statistic was. It's in my cat longevity course. It's something like only 15% of cats actually ever see a veterinarian. So kind
very
of
interesting. Yeah.
So vaccines, the thing is, if you do take your cat to the veterinarian, if you're that good cat owner who takes them in every year for an exam, which I do recommend, let's get exams on our kitty cats. Mm-hmm. You know, let's find things like diabetes and hyperthyroidism and kidney failure before they're actually in failure.
Right.
So it is important, but what I recommend is go in, get an exam and get blood work and urine and, you know, just kind of skip over the whole vaccine thing. And I'm not saying that they never need a vaccine. Like I said, mine are going to get a rabies vaccine. If I give it, it will be a slightly different dose maybe than somebody else might give, but
yep.
I can do that with my cats.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing with the vaccines, so you want to get as few as possible, which might be one rabies and one December for life.
Life.
That's probably good. You can do titers. Do blood test titers to see where they are, particularly if your cats are going outside. So, like my 3 older cats, I think in their lifetime, they're about 13 now, and in their lifetime, they've had at least 2 rabies vaccines. There might have been a 3rd one in there somewhere. They might have had 2. And I'm fine with them going outside. I don't worry about them at all. They never got a leukemia vaccine. I don't like the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And then distemper vaccine, they had a kitten.
And you mentioned something real important about the timing of those. Talk about that you discovered in your practice when you were experimenting
with
the schedules.
So the big thing with vaccines is you don't want to give them too early. And mm-hmm. that's where we make mistakes. So, you know, let's say you find this little baby kitten along the road and you decide you're going to be the good Samaritan, take it home, bottle feed it, raise it up and take it to the vet. And then the vet goes, okay, when he hits 6 weeks old, bring him in. We'll give him his first vaccine. And then when he's 10 weeks old, bring him back. We'll give him another vaccine. And then when he's 14 weeks old, bring him back. We'll give him another vaccine. My kittens are 8 and 10 weeks. They haven't had a vaccine. So what we found in my practice over the years of slowly changing how we do things is that the later you give the first vaccine, the more likely likelihood you'll only need one.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't want to give these guys anything until they're about 12 weeks old.
Yep.
And then more than likely, one is all we're going to need. The two mama cats got one. And it's funny, I keep getting text reminders from the veterinarian saying,
"Which
Kitty and Domino are due for their second December vaccine?" I'm like, no, they're not.
No.
Never. And if you don't vaccinate your cats, and so if you find a stray cat, you could do a titer first to see whether they even need anything boosted.
Mm-hmm.
But if you decide you don't want to go through the expense of doing that, if you're going to give a vaccine to an adult, just one. You don't need to do a series of two.
No.
That's just a fallacy. Their immune system is going to take that one and run with it, and they're going to be good to go. So we started vaccinating kittens much later. If I could get the owners to hold off until they were about 12 to 14 weeks old, and then we would just do the one, and that would be it. The other thing is you don't want to give a bunch of vaccines at the same time. So rabies will be done at least 2 to 3 weeks away from the December vaccine for these guys.
Yeah.
And the other thing is you want the vaccines given as low as possible. Well, there's a lot of debate about this, but as low as possible on the hind leg. So in my practice, we always did rabies on the right hind as low as we could get it. So usually below the stifle, between the hock and the stifle, because there's enough tissue there that they don't want to kill you. And then the distemper we would give on the left hind.
Mm-hmm.
So that way, if they had a reaction, we knew what caused it and we knew exactly where it was. They're more likely to make a tumor from the rabies and the leukemia vaccines
mm-hmm.
than from the distemper vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly, a lot of the cat veterinary groups are calling for vaccinating them in the tail, because then you can amputate the tail if they made a tumor. But the thing is, you'd have to give it low enough on the tail to be able to amputate the tail, because if you gave it up near the base, then you wouldn't be able to get a big enough margin. So, and I never gave vaccines in the tail for a few reasons. One, I think it would hurt like heck, and I don't like inflicting pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the cats would inflict some pain on me. And the second thing is, I don't think we have like the greatest circulation there for like the body actually grabbing hold and really using that to make a good immunity. So
right.
I don't know. I don't think we have good studies on a lot of people vaccinating tails of cats, because I don't think too many people are doing it.
Right. Right. Well, so I mean, I think a lot of the people that I talk with, they don't even want to, they're afraid to take their cat to the vet because they don't want to be muscled or bullied into getting a whole round of vaccines that they're not comfortable with to begin with. And I think that goes back to that 15% of people see the vet, you know?
Well,
and that's
cats,
sad.
Cats are difficult. You got to get them in a box.
Yeah.
So
they don't want to go anywhere.
My carriers for these cats are in my office with the door open. The cats sleep in them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes time to take them anywhere, and Gwen takes them to the office quite often to allow them to play and run around and give me a break. So they're used to going in the car. They're used
right.
to going in the box. So that is a mistake that people make. You never train your cat to go in a box. A carrier or a bag.
Yeah.
Train your cat to that. Leave it out. Let them get used to it. Like it. Love it. So
mm-hmm.
that when you do have to take them somewhere, it's not torture.
Not stressful.
And then be really careful when you're carrying that box. Don't be swinging it and banging it against your leg. Don't be flipping it on its side or upside
mm-hmm.
down. Just imagine, you know, you're a child and you're in a foreign land where you don't speak the language, and somebody literally grabs you by the back of the neck, shoves you in a box, and then puts you in this loud, vibrating cigarette box.
Yes.
And then when you get to where you're going, you're then, you know,
and
grabbed by the neck and
land.
Pulled back out, and then there's a bunch of strangers manhandling you and poking you with sharp objects.
Mm-hmm. Not fun.
Not good. Not good. So you have to train your cats early
mm-hmm.
on
yep.
to go with the flow, and then it makes it a lot easier to get them in and get that annual exam and get that blood work. My cats are all my cats are really pretty chill about the whole process because they, they've had boxes and, you know, been allowed to sleep in them. So train your cats early. And if, even if your cats are older, take their carrier and put it out in the room, throw some treats in there, let them go in and out.
Make it part of their environment. Now, the other thing that that you probably, I know for a fact, you have strong feelings about are not a not making our cats susceptible to toxic things like flea tick, things that they don't need, you know, if they're indoors and they're, you know, we just want to reduce their toxin load so they can be healthier and not have reactions and things like that. So we still have a few minutes left, so share your best tips as far as that goes.
Yeah, so interesting. So we've got this one cat who has been living in the barn. When I took her in to get spayed, I tried to keep her in the house for a couple of days after she got spayed. Oh, my gosh, she flipped out. She was so scared of being in the house. She, like, the barn is her place. So, and the only one who can touch her is my mother because my mother feeds her everything. So I said, you know, we're in North Carolina. It's summer. It's kind of flea season, and I can't get near that cat to even, like, flea comb her or look through her to see if she's got anything. So I'm like, ugh, I don't want to throw chemicals on these cats. What am I going to do? Well, we have the Buck Mountain parasite dust, which is safe for cats. And you only need about a half a teaspoon for a kitty cat. So I said, Mom, come here. Hold out your hand. So I sprinkled some in her hand, and I said, now go pet that cat. So she, you know, put her food in the bowl, and then while the cat was eating, she was just, you know, petting her and rubbing the parasite dust through her coat. And I'm like, all right, good, problem solved. Because, you know, when you have cats that are semi-feral, and you don't want to be putting a lot of chemicals even on your indoor kitties, that's a really simple thing that you can do. It's safe for them to groom. It's safe, you know, I like to use the parasite dust, like, even in my windowsill because of flies this time of year, that sort of thing. So there are so many natural things we can do. And part of the problem is when you do take your cat to the vet says, oh, well, are you giving them monthly heartworm preventative? Are you, seriously, are you giving them monthly flea and tick preventative? Well, let's see, my cat doesn't go outside. He doesn't have exposure. The only way he's going to get fleas is if I bring them in. Which I, you know, people call, used to call my office and go, my cat has fleas and my cat doesn't go outside. I'm like, oh, you gave your cat fleas. Which is
where have you been?
Where did you go?
You've been rolling around in the dark.
So we really do not need to be putting chemicals on or in our cats. And, you know, cats are super sensitive and they lay on our furniture. They lay on our floors. They groom themselves all the time. So be very careful what chemicals you're using when you're cleaning your floors or your counters. If you have cats who walk on your counters, I'd love if ours didn't, but at night while we're in the bedroom.
It's a lost cause.
There's cat prints everywhere on the counters in the morning. I'm like, oh, man. You know, don't leave anything out. So be really careful what you're using. I don't like any fragrances in any of my cleaners. I don't use fragrance sprays unless they are, like Kinnikind has some really nice room sprays that are essential oils that are safe for the dogs and cats. So maybe something like that. I've used that a little bit because I have 10 cats in one room. but no scented candles. Be very careful with diffusers, anything like that, because our cats are super sensitive. They are not small dogs. Cats are totally different than dogs. And again, their liver doesn't have all the same enzymes. They don't process things as well. So cats like to go into liver failure when there's toxins in their environment. So I'm not a fan of, you know, topical flea and tick, oral flea and tick for sure. I'm not a fan of flea tick collars. You know, that's another big
debacle
going on. We might actually be getting one of those off the market.
Saw that. I'm so excited.
So
I only have like 100 to go.
That's the first step. Then, you know, then we'll go for those orals next. But, you know, FDA, they move slow.
Yep, they do. So would you recommend, like, regular detox for liver for cats just throughout the year?
You know, I guess it kind of depends what kind of environment they live in. Like, I don't detox my cats because they're on a raw diet. They are very minimally vaccinated.
Sure.
They don't have chemicals used on them. I don't use chemicals to, I don't have carpet anywhere, and I don't use chemicals to clean anything.
Yeah.
Because we have so many animals, we have really easy clean floors, and we have leather furniture.
Mm-hmm.
I bought one upholstered chair. I don't know what I was thinking, because when I let the cats out to play, where do they all go? Oh, right to that chair.
Right to that chair.
Right to that chair. Yeah. Well, yeah. They're just climbing on it because they think it's fun.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So it really depends on your own house. Do you have to evaluate how much carpet, you know,
yep.
how much, what does your upholstery look like, what is your furniture,
yep.
how much, you know.
And if your cats go outside, you have to consider what's the neighborhood like. Do you have neighbors who are spraying their lawns? Do the mosquito spray trucks come through your neighborhood? Like, what are they exposed to? So, I mean, we live on 25 acres, and we don't use chemicals on the lawn or on the fields. So, you know,
exactly.
my cats have pretty minimal exposure, which is why I have thousands of mice living in my barn, because the cats aren't out there yet, and I refuse to put out anything to kill the mice. So I'm feeding a lot of mice, too.
No, it's true. It's true. Mice make great meals.
Mice would make wonderful meals, and I'm hoping that these cats will go out and help. The poor barn cat who's out there, I saw her with a mouse the other day. I was like, you go, kitty.
Yes.
Only, you know, like 2 million left to go.
That's right. Don't worry, you'll have help soon.
That's why I keep telling her, your help is coming.
It's so true. It's so true.
Poor dazzle kitty.
I know. Well, any final comments, thoughts, as we kind of wrap things up, just best overall for
We didn't touch on spay neuter, but spay neuter for kitties is different than dogs. Again, if you want to spay and neuter somewhere around 9 to 12 months,
yeah.
I would say. I like to let them reach full maturity. I don't like the early spay neuter, the 6 to 8 thing.
No.
I don't even like the 6 month thing. Just remember that if you have boys and girls, the little girls can get pregnant by about 6-7 months, so somebody got to get taken care of. So, yes, ours, at least half, around 6 months, are going to have to get done. I'm not sure. I haven't decided which half, whether we're doing the boys first or the girls first, but we don't need more.
Right. No, it is important, because you want their endocrine system to be able to produce all the hormones that they need to get fully grown. And if you truncate any of that beforehand, then you could have problems like a lot of male kitties with, you know, very small ureters and all that mixed tissues.
So, and the thing with cats is the mammary cancer that we see in cats that don't get spayed until really late or don't get spayed at all is very aggressive. 95% chance of malignancy, spreads very quickly. They don't respond well to chemo or anything else. So I do recommend going ahead and getting girl kitties spayed. Where dogs were in a different conversation with the males and females, but for the kitty cats, we're still in the conversation of 9 to 12 months. You got to go ahead and get them done.
I waited till my baby girl was 9 months. I was dragging my feet. I finally did it.
Well,
but she was.
That's the best way to do it, if you can do it that way.
Yeah, exactly. Well, tell everybody where they can find you, and if there's anything you want them to know, just in general. If you have, I know you have some platforms, and you have a store, and all that good stuff. Just follow you.
So the website is drjudymorgan.com, drjudymorgan.com. My Facebook page is Judy Morgan DVM, as in Doctor of Veterinary Medicine. We do Facebook Live. 4 or 5 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
Just depends, but we hold summits. We did a cat summit not too long ago. We also have Dr. Judy U, which you can go just to Dr. Judy U, or you can get there through the website, drjudymorgan.com, and that's where we have our courses. So we have a course that's only about an hour and 15, hour and a half on cat longevity. It's only $29. We have a dog longevity course. We have a lab results courses. There's a whole bunch of things on there now. And so we're always adding new content to that. And it's really about our store has about 400 natural products in it. But our main focus is education and empowering empowering pet owners to stand their ground. First of all, be well informed so that when you are having a conversation with your traditional veterinarian, you are coming from a place of knowledge and power,
yes,
not getting backed into a corner. You know, if you can refute what they're saying and just say, no, I'm not going to do it that way because I've researched and blah, 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 that's a lot better than just going, I don't want to do it. You can't make me. And getting into an argument with them. So.
Right, right. Exactly, exactly. Well, this has been so much fun. I know we've had a lot of great comments, and I know they're so appreciative of your time, and I am too. So give all of your kitties a big hug and kiss for me.
I gotta go feed them.
Yeah. I'll be so happy to see you open that door.
I'm going to get attacked. They climb up my leg. They're Klingons. They'll be everywhere.
Exactly. So, everybody, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and we look forward to seeing you again next month. Have a great week, and take care. Bye, you guys.
Thank you.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.